This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on loss of earnings. I'm joined by barrister Alexander Adamu from 33 Bedford Row Chambers in London. Alex has a mixed practice and he regularly represents clients in various aspects of civil and commercial litigation, including in complex and multi-day cases. Alex has a keen interest in discrimination, whistleblowing, unfair and wrongful dismissal and equal pay claims. Thank you very much for joining us today, Alex.
Oh, no, thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, indeed. So let's talk about loss of earnings. Now, this is a part one episode. So let's try and introduce our listeners to what we mean by loss of earnings, in what aspect we're going to be talking about it. So tell us a bit more about that, please.
Of course. So obviously the first thing we would need to go through is what exactly do we mean by loss of earnings? Now, normally it makes sense to have a sort of common sense approach, just to go, what would you naturally think are earnings? And from there, that can be your starting point. That can be your base. So things like your wages, your salaries, professional fees, if you're a consultant, if you happen to have shares in a company or you're in a partnership, even things like a company car, those are things that can be considered earnings that are quote unquote lost. And it's worth just mentioning at this stage that we're talking in a personal injury context. So let's just say you've suffered a fall at work, or you're in a road traffic accident, or something unfortunate has happened, and you've been unable to work for a certain period of time. But okay. One thing that's worth thinking about is that other things such as prize money can also be considered as earnings. Although that's not something people would naturally think is earnings, it's, as far as the law is concerned, it can be.
And what do we mean by prize money?
So
lottery win, for example?
Yes, exactly. So when looking at prize money, if you have entered a competition, for example, or let's just say you are a competitive athlete, for example, prize money that you would have won will be considered as your earnings, for example. And this will touch on some of the things we might get to later about the difference between the self-employed and the employed. But obviously, if you are, let's just say you're a footballer, you're a tennis player, you're not paid a salary, are you? You don't have the British Lawn and Tennis Association doesn't pay Roger Federer a salary to play in Wimbledon.
That's why he wins the matches, Alex, because that's the only time they get paid, right?
Well, exactly. That's some of the mercenary world that is the self-employed. The winners get paid and the losers don't, unfortunately. And that happens across the board in self-employed. It's obviously, a lot of that element is a lot of the self-promotion, the marketing, the publicising. And the point is that it's really about what affects the individual business as a whole. And there are lots of parallels that can be seen, even with, you know, elements of my job as a self-employed barrister. A lot of it is, you know, the work I do a good job. People come and use me again. I don't. That doesn't happen. So it's all about providing that first top tier service.
So what we're talking about today is going to be loss of earnings relating to personal injury. And I know that word personal injury just seems to be bandied around so much in the last at least 10 years of my life anyway. But actually, when you think about it, it's not just a car accident. It is literally, and I say these words because I've heard them so many times, a trip or a fall, or where you've had injury as a result of an incident. I think that's probably the quickest way, shortest way to put it.
Exactly. I mean, we've all seen the adverts. We've seen it all publicised. Have you suffered an accident at work?
A trip or fall anywhere. Yes.
Exactly. Everybody's seen them. When we talk about personal injury, when you break it down at a base level, it's an injury to the person, as in you. And in this case, it's when we talk about it as a law, it's about whether it was your fault or not. And that's part of what we get into. It's part of a broader section of what we call tort law, but there's no need to get into the semantics on that.
Yeah, no, I get it. Okay, so let's talk about how loss of earnings is calculated in personal injury cases. How do they look at it? Because you've mentioned earlier when you said even a car could be a part of your earnings. So how do they look at a typical case? And let's take an example so that, you know, we can relate to it more and say, well, that's actually the method of calculation.
Of course. So when looking at how loss of earnings are calculated, really, so first thing we have to do is we have to distinguish between the past and the future, because there's always going to be a little bit of a difference between the two. And if I was going to say it came down to one word, I'd probably say it's evidence. Because really, when you get down to it, any loss that you want to recover, you're saying, let's just say someone has hit your car. I'm driving my car. I've come to a T-junction. I've pulled out. I've looked both ways. I've indicated. I've pulled out. Someone has run a red light and they've hit my car.
It's their fault, because if they run a red light, then they've hit your car. It's their fault. Okay.
Exactly. Now, there's always sometimes going to be an argument about whose fault it is, but we'll move on from that and assume that in this case, it's their fault. Obviously, let's just say, as someone who spends a lot of their day on the computer, as I'm sure a lot of us are at the moment, I need to be able to type. If I'm writing an advice or I'm writing a skeleton, I need to be able to type. But let's just say it broke my arm, so I can't type anymore. So the first thing would need to be calculated is, while the matter is going through court, I would be saying you need to be keeping a record of everything that you're saying you've lost. So in this case,
let me just say something there. It may not go to court because it may be that the insurers are dealing with it. So the insurers are actually happily trying to negotiate this position and calculate your loss of earnings, right?
Quite possibly.
Likely it could go to court, but it could be that the insurers settle it out of court. But yes, so carry on, please.
No, exactly. Very, very possible. And especially in road traffic claims, insurers are always involved. There are always questions, especially when courtesy cars are involved. But those are, again, a slightly different and they're slightly outside of what we're talking about today. So the first thing is, really, when looking at your loss of earnings up until the date of trial, what the court will normally do is the court will normally backdate and calculate on the basis of what you earned before the accident. So if I was earning £500 a week before the accident, and for the sake of this example, I'm an employed person, so there's no fluctuation, that's what I get every week. £500 after tax, after contributions, that's what I get net. Well, the court's going to go, okay, well, had the accident not occurred, it's likely that you would have been earning at the same rate. You would have kept earning that £500 a week.
And this is why the past is just as important, because they're going to look at what you were earning up until that time. And it will be very unfortunate if you are having a bad few months or a bad year, because it does happen to us all in business where that could happen, or in employment, actually, even. So, yeah, so they will look at what you were earning and what you would have earned had you have not had the accident, had your body had not been affected in the way that it was, to have prevented you from earning. That's the key here, isn't it, Alex?
Yep, I would completely agree with that. And the thing is, there is some flexibility in the court. So if there is a reason, and it has to be a pretty special reason, but if there is a reason to say that, you know, the pre-accident earning, so what you were earning before the accident, would have changed, and that affects what you would have earned. So let's just say on the day of this accident, to go back to our little car example where I've been hit, I got told that morning, completely separate from the accident, that I was fired, for example.
Or made redundant or something like that.
Along those lines. Then, obviously, there's going to be an argument to say, well, actually, your earnings wouldn't have continued.
Because That argument will probably come from the other side, because they're trying to
from the other side.
Limit the amount you claim.
Exactly. From your side, it's probably going to be more of a case of, oh, but I was up for that promotion in 3 weeks.
Or I could have easily gone on to and got another job, but I didn't even apply because I was physically not able to, not well enough.
Exactly. And that will come on to something slightly different that we call a loss of chance. But that's something, it's a slightly different question because it's a slightly more complex question, especially when you're looking at new jobs or if you're looking at a raise, because obviously there's always going to be the argument, and that forms the basis of it, is how likely were you to get that raise or that new job? Because obviously we all understand in this world, it's a sad fact, but there are no guarantees in this life. Something can be set up, but until you've signed on the dotted line, until you start, things happen, unfortunately. So then when looking at it, so the court will look at what you've earned before. They will make that assumption that you're going to be earning at the same rate. And then what they'll do is obviously the court has to be satisfied. The court has to feel comfortable. And in this case, we call it the balance of probability. So more sure than not. So I like to break it down in terms of numbers. And this is a very rough estimate, because no one can really say, oh, I'm 51% sure that you're right, or I am 49%. It doesn't work that way.
No, of course. That's not reality in any case.
Exactly. It's not reality. If you think about it, the court has to be more sure than not. And remember, this isn't as high as criminal. Obviously, in criminal, it's beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a very, very high threshold. And obviously, because it's a far more serious consequence that we're dealing with. But they must be sure that it is the defendant's fault. So they must be sure that it's not your fault. Now, obviously, there are lots of things that can go into that. And there's whole sections of law on whether it's partly your fault. Is it some of their fault and your fault? Is it your fault? But let's, for the sake of this argument, we're going to say, no, the court has gone. It's entirely the defendant's fault. It's entirely the other driver's fault. And then that's what the court will do. The court will look at your pre-accident earnings, having taken off all the things that they need to take off. So that includes things like your income tax, your national insurance contributions, if there are any compulsory contributions to, for example, a pension scheme.
So your net income is what is being looked at. So let's talk about, will they have to pay tax on any award money received as a result of a personal injury accident on loss of earnings? So say somebody says, okay, your net earnings, for argument's sake, were £1,000. You're now going to be awarded from the court £2,000. Will the receiver have to pay tax on that?
Well, so the first thing I'm going to say, just before I answer this question, I'm going to obviously be speaking relatively generally here.
No, of course.
One thing that I'm not is I'm not an accountant. Yes. I'm not a tax specialist. And obviously I was
saying... Really? I thought Barris is... No, I'm only joking, Alex.
Well, I know we're considered a jack of all trades in a one-stop shop. But yes. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
I would say on that point, it is quite interesting, because particularly in family law, when you're dealing with the finances of the marriage, that you have to tell clients, look, you need to go and see an accountant for that element of this claim, or a tax specialist. Because actually, naturally, people don't think that those kind of professionals have to come into these sorts of equations, but they do.
No, they do. And the thing is, it's really interesting, because obviously, I appreciate for a lot of people, the entirety of the court process is a very scary process. It's a lot of things that a lot of people have never been involved in before.
Yes.
I speak to a lot of my clients, like, no, it's the first time I've been in court, has been for this car accident that happened a year ago, 2 years ago, however long ago it was. And obviously that can be quite a scary thing. And obviously they look to us as the barristers and the solicitors for that reassurance, for that comfort in saying this is how it goes. But there always has to be that knowledge of, you know, your lawyer is going to be a specialist in whatever area they are practicing in. And that might be multiple areas. So as I do employment, I do civil, I do commercial, I do a few different ones. Obviously, no one can know everything. So it's a case of sometimes there has to be someone else that gets called in, especially when you're dealing with large amounts of money. I always say...
To work out whether tax should be paid on
exactly.
that. Yeah.
I always say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And
I like
never
that.
Is that more right than with things, especially when you're not an expert in the field.
No, indeed.
But when looking at an award, and in this case, we're looking at a judgment. So when looking at a judgment, and in this case, a settlement and a judgment can almost be considered the same thing, although they're technically quite different. So whether you've settled out of court or whether the judge has gone, no, you're right, you're entitled to this amount of money. The first thing we need to consider is whether it's a lump sum or what we call periodic payment. So is it in one go or is it broken up? Now, for a lot of people, it's going to be in one go. Because if we're dealing with lower value matters, then it's more likely to be in one go. The bigger the number, obviously, for a lot of people, especially in financial circumstances like we've got, they might say, listen, can we break it down? So, for example, I dealt with a case where we ended up settling, but for the amount was, in this case, it was about £120,000. And obviously, we thought, well, it's going to be very difficult for someone to find £120,000 in 14 days, in 2 weeks. So we said, no, pay us. In this case, it was a couple of £1,000 every week until you've paid it all off. Whereas in another case, someone was claiming £5,000. Well, as the insurers, when you're dealing with insurers, they're not going to miss £5,000. So it's perfectly fine to say, no, pay that within 2-3 weeks.
And also what I've seen, Alex, in these sorts of cases is that generally when an offer is made for settlement, there is a time limit to when that money has to be paid. And sometimes tactically that's actually, you know, quite clever to use settlements in that way to say, basically, look, the claim would be worth £30,000, but we would accept £15,000 if you make that payment within 14 days. And I've seen cases settle like that, which is, you know, really handy in the sense that people are willing to accept perhaps less, because there's no guarantee what a court is going to order ever. Give it, if it's, you know, be it that it's paid in a reasonable amount of time. So let's talk about sick pay and salary. So say you were due... you were due to get bonuses if you, you know, in the next 6 months, if you'd performed in a sort of certain way, and that's the period of time, let's assume that you have not been able to work due to the accident. Could you factor in your loss of earnings? You know, could you factor in bonuses that you would have got? Could you factor in things like that?
So realistically, what we have to bear in mind when considering this is, what is the purpose of compensation? Now, the purpose of compensation is essentially, in this case, when dealing with a tort, is to put the injured party in the position they would have been if the tort, if the wrong thing hadn't been done, is the main
thing. Yeah.
And the point is, it's not to profit, it's to compensate for loss. So when looking at benefits under a contract, in this case, your employment contract, then really the point that you're going to have to say is, no, you can't, because that's what we're going to, what we end up calling in a broad term, double recovery. Because the point is,
so hold on, let's just make this absolutely clear. So if you were up to get a bonus because you were going to perform in a certain numbers and targets, and you knew you were heading, you know, that way, you can prove that you had your bonuses paid the year before and you performed, but you're not able to do your work for 6 months, so therefore you lose the opportunity of that bonus. You're saying you can't claim that as part of loss of earnings?
Well, we're going to need to split that up a little bit, and we're going to need to break it down a bit, because really, a bonus might be included because effectively your bonus isn't guaranteed.
It's always at the discretion of your employer, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's the first thing you need to consider. So really what you're dealing with there is a loss of chance, because you're saying, I had the chance to earn this bonus that I didn't get. What you can't claim is, for example, let's just say you took 2 weeks off of work because of your accident, because of whatever it was, and you were entitled to sick pay for those 2 weeks. What you can't then do is say, well, I'm going to have the sick pay and I want my 2 weeks of earnings.
Yeah, from the claim,
exactly. Because then that's effectively as if you've gone, well, it's as if I'd gone to work for those 2 weeks and I get the bonus on top of the sick pay.
That's a very interesting point, actually, Alex, because most people, if they have to be off of work, if they're employed, will get sick pay to some degree from their employer. Exactly. So what we're saying here is if you do get sick pay for the time that you're off of work, that is essentially replacing your salary. You can't then go into a claim and say, I was off of work for 3 months, and say we're assuming that you got your sick pay for 3 months, and I want to claim 3 months worth of lost salary as loss of earnings. What we're saying is you cannot do that because you didn't lose the earnings effectively. That's why.
Exactly. So what you need to do, and this goes to everybody, and I know this is going to sound cliche, the lawyer saying it, but read your contract.
Sound cliche? Oh, well, I don't know about that. Just a bit. No, I get it. I totally get it. But I mean, when we say read the contract, you're saying read your employment contract on the basis of your sick pay and what you can get.
Exactly.
In its purest sense, for the purposes of loss of earnings in a claim, we're saying if your employer pays you sick pay for not being able to do your job, attend at your workplace or do your job as a result of your injury, you cannot then claim a loss of earnings in a claim because you didn't lose those earnings. Your employer gave you the sick pay.
Exactly. So what we need to be considering is, for example, if your contract says you're entitled to 2 weeks of sick pay, for example, then obviously you need to be saying, okay, well, I can't claim for those 2 weeks. But if you're ill longer than those 2 weeks, then obviously we've got a bit of a question because you're not entitled to sick pay from your employer. And you're then potentially on the position where you have to rely on statutory sick pay or some other mechanism.
I want to ask a question here, Alex, because we've just got time to discuss one more area. And I'm going to go back to a loss of chance.
Yeah.
So, because I know of somebody that this happened to personally, actually. So as a result of an injury, they were off for so long that they were made, and I'll use the term, involuntarily redundant.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't continue with their job for such a long time. The work, you know, the employer had to let them go. So they lost their career. They couldn't carry out that job any longer. They couldn't continue with that work any longer. How does the court view cases where you have to take a long-term view in the sense that that person cannot continue with their career? Switching careers, the majority of the time will mean you have a reduced income. How does the court measure loss of earnings in that case? And obviously we're talking very broadly and generally, but let's talk about that.
Of course. So really, there's a slight nuance. There's a slight distinction in that question. Because there is a difference between an accident which has meant I can no longer work at all or in a particular field. So let's just say again, I work as a bricklayer. That's my job. And because of an accident, I have lost a leg. So I cannot work as a bricklayer anymore, at least not in any reasonable capacity. So there is a distinction between the future loss of earnings you could claim from because of that accident as compared to a loss of a business opportunity or chance. So I'll take them briefly in turn. So firstly is loss of future earnings. And that's in your example that you gave, that's slightly more what we're looking at here, because we're saying that because of this accident, this person was no longer able to fulfill their role. And as a result, they lost their career. So what this means is what the court would do, and the normal method of assessment is what we call the multiplier method. But to break that down, what they would do is they would look at their net annual loss, and they would multiply that by the number of years that that loss is to keep going. So for example, when looking at the net annual loss, that should, again, if you're employed, that's a far easier question to ask than if you are self-employed. But that's an entirely separate conversation on its own. And then what you're looking at is you say, well, how long was that to have gone for? So again, what would your career have potentially been? 10, 20, 30 years, however long that might have been. What that is then done is that figure, and you don't just get that figure. It's not like the court says, oh, okay, well, you would have earned £50,000 for the next 40 years. Here you go. Have £2 million. It doesn't quite work that way. So what that figure has then done, that figure is then adjusted, so it's more likely than not reduced, to reflect that claimant, that person's prospects of promotion, or if there's a, to reflect the likelihood of an increase in their earnings.
Or another job. In this case, it will be what can they do? What other careers and work can they take up that could possibly pay? So say, for argument's sake, you were going to lose £100,000 worth of earnings because you had, you know, another 10 years or 15 years worth of work to do, and then you can't no longer earn that money, but you may be able to do something that can earn you £25,000. So therefore, the court will likely say, we'll take the 100,000 minus the 25 of what you could possibly earn, and here's an award potentially of around 75. That's the nuts of that.
In the nuts and bolts, what the court will do is the court will also take off a little bit, probably take off a little bit more, because what the court also takes into account is the fact that if you're successful, you're getting this in one go.
Yes.
So you're getting a lot more money in one go, and you're expected, the court expects people, and there's massive amounts of debate as to what needs to be done in relation to it. But realistically, the court expects you to take that lump sum and invest it. And now, obviously, there are some not, I know, I see your eyes just widen in the
really?
Sense of,
the court expects you to take it and invest it.
So let's pick that apart, really, because
we've got about 2 minutes left. So let's get on to the second part of this question as well.
Yeah. Okay. So some allowance is made for the fact that you are not considered a prudent investor. You're not a stock exchange. They don't expect you to play the stock market. But what they do expect you to be is sensible with your money and to live off not only the lump sum, but any interest or dividends or anything else that you get from it. Now, to contrast that, just to finish off with loss of chance, is realistically, this is when you're looking at, I've lost an opportunity, and it has to be a relative, and in this case, a relatively definite opportunity. It has to be pretty certain. You can't go, oh, well, I would have got a, if my business had kept growing like this, it would have gone for 500 million in 5 years' time. Not that speculative. It has to be real and substantial. It has to be. And what the court will do is the court will look at, well, how likely are you to get that benefit? And you have to, again, do that on the more likely than not 50%. You have to make the court sure that that is a real and substantial possibility. And if that is the case, then they have to look at how likely were you to get that benefit. What is the price of that benefit? And then reduce it by how likely you were. So, for example, just to round it out with an example, just to close us off, you would want to say something or something along the lines of, I had a business contract coming up that was going to be worth £100,000.
And I've now lost that because I've now lost, carry out the business. Yeah.
For example, let's just say it was a construction contract and you're bidding for it. So you're with multiple other companies and you were bidding for it. So the court would say, okay, well, yes, no, we are certain on the balance of probabilities that there is a link between the defendant's conduct and you losing this opportunity. So the court is again sure that that is the reason you lost this opportunity, not something else. Then the court will go, okay, so this contract that you're bidding for is worth £100,000. How likely were you to get that contract?
I think you said something at the very beginning of this podcast, which actually we come back to at the end, which has been quite nice to do. Evidence. You need to show evidence of what you have lost and why, and together with the probability that, yes, it was very likely that you would have gone ahead with that work or that job would have still been yours had this terrible accident not happened. Then you are more likely to be able to convince and show a court your side of the story and talk about loss of earnings, you know, at a much different level than if you can't show that evidence. If you're just saying, well, it was likely or probable, you know, things like that. But God, I can't, that's gone super quick. So obviously we're going to do a part two, Alex. I mean, it goes without saying.
We've just scratched the surface.
We haven't even scratched the surface. I've just scratched. There you go. But thank you so much for your time today. It's been really informative. Thank you.
You are very, very welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute delight.
Excellent. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.